I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class Podcast. I'm Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are, of course, here to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't, who the bloody hell will, babes, eh? Who? Answer me. No. No one will. So we're doing it, innit?
You've been hanging out with your teenage nieces, haven't you?
I try and think of something new every week.
Yeah, no, maybe don't. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. So on that note, who are we celebrating this week, Law?
Well, I'm proper over the moon to introduce this week's guest. I've been trying to get her on here for yonks, so now the day has finally arrived and I'm absolutely thrilled. Now, before I say anything about this woman's incredible achievements, let me tell you this. There is a cake made of dreams, yeah, sat in front of me, which our guest has baked especially for me. Well, and Hannah, obviously.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to, well, basically inhale it. And get this. Honestly, I don't actually really like cake.
That's a true story.
I know. We'll get to that later. Now, not only an incredibly talented baker, but this week's guest is also a cookbook author, a Sunday Times columnist, and hello, a pub landlady. Get out of my pub.
Oh,
will I go home?
Please. And we'll be heading down there for a light sherry in no time, don't you worry. But no doubt you will best know this week's guest for winning one of the nation's favourite and one of my favourite shows of all time, The Great British Bake Off.
Woohoo! Yeah, and since that win in 2016, our guest has gone from strength to strength, releasing two cookbooks, one of which has just come out and called Happy Cooking. She appeared on Dancing on Ice, terrifying. She's been regularly baking on shows such as This Morning, Christmas Kitchen, and has been bossing it on the panel of ITV's Loose Women.
She has even been an ambassador for Avon Cosmetics.
Really? Oh my God, hello Avon calling.
Oh my God, you've got all the voices.
I know. I haven't worked in a while. Yeah, can you tell?
Oh dear Lord, it's like one long audition. Whilst, of course, all of these achievements are super impressive, me and Law thought it important to mention our guest's extensive work for charity. She's been raising money by hiking and baking for charities, including Copperfield and Cancer Research. And most recently, after Marcus Rashford exposed the government's pitiful offerings for free school meals, she opened up a pub, giving out meals to those who needed it.
She's a bloody diamond and a complete sweetheart. So please give a very warm, proper class podcast welcome to Candice Brown.
Woo-hoo!
That was epic, wasn't it?
Make me blush.
Was it? I hope it was all true, because you know you go on Wikipedia these days.
Wikipedia, I love that. I was waiting for something to drop in there and me look at you going, what the no, it's all there. Yeah,
I know, it's weird, isn't it, when people sort of list your achievements. It's always a bit cringy, but it's important to know. And it's like, it's so lovely also as well, just, you know, when I gave you a Google earlier, just like, you know, earlier in the year or last year with the whole school meals thing, that, you know, you took it upon yourself to open up the pub and give out meals. How did that work out?
It's one of those funny things, isn't it? And it is also weird, because we're saying, was it last year? Was it the year before?
Oh, like, yeah, I know.
The last couple of years
of time
just mulched into one. But it's one of those things. I used to be a teacher, and when I saw like what was happening, and one of the first things is when we shut down, when we went into lockdown and people were having to teach from home, I was seeing all these people like going, having to homeschool, like, what on earth am I doing? I mean, it's hard enough being a teacher in a classroom setting with resources and as your job, let alone having to do it at home. So I was trying to sort of help in that way by doing sort of food technology. And then seeing that the other side of things. So I worked in the special needs department and I was a head of year as well. And actually, that's the side where you see that even in sort of affluent areas, there are kids that go without, and actually there are kids that struggle. And when school stops, there's nothing for them. And then when they said, oh, you're not going to get this, or there was no food, that sometimes is their only meal of the day. Yeah, and of course, I was straight on board with that. And I said, right, it's a little pub in the middle of a tiny little village, but we are open. If you need anything, you don't even have to ask, just turn up, like send someone. If you're embarrassed, drop me a message, whatever, like no questions asked. If you need something, just ask, you can have it, like literally, because it's been hard. It's been fucking tough.
I know.
So,
it's amazing.
If we could have done anything, then obviously we would do it.
Talking of food, I mean, we do have this cake that's it's not a cake. What is it? Explain to the listener. A brownie.
Brownies. So they are double chocolate, caramel and sea salt brownies.
Which is great because I'm not a big cake lover. I'll never thank you for a birthday
cake. Hurry
up and
eat the cake.
So we're going to eat it live. Sorry, what's that thing if people don't like chewing? What's that thing called? Phobia. There's a phobia.
Sorry, listener, if that's you. But honestly, I'm still eating the cake.
Ready?
Okay.
No, oh, soggy nervous. Bottom here. No, you can't get that with it, can that. You? You can't get a soggy bottom with a brownie, can you?
You could.
Oh my God. Candice is amazing.
Moist. Why do people hate that word? That's one of my favourite words ever.
What's that?
Moist.
I've not been a fan, but now you're applying it to this cake. I'm a newly a fan. I mean, I'm going to have to stop eating this because
it's so lovely.
Oh, just one more bite. I'm not being funny, but...
Oh, God.
Michelle, our producer, whipped a section of these off into the other room. Didn't have never seen a move so far.
They were gone.
I do like also, though, in true proper working class style, Candice has popped it in a Chinese takeaway...
Foil container. Right, last bite.
I promise it was clean. It didn't have egg fried rice in it.
So, Candice, we start each week asking our guests to take us back to a place and time that has some meaning to them, somewhere that has a connection to their working class roots. So if you could take us anywhere today, where would you take us?
Oh, this was really easy for me, but in a hard way when we spoke about this. And it'd be back to my nan's house. I was born and brought up in North London, hence the stunning accent, which I'm very, very proud of.
Whereabouts in North London?
So Edmonton, born and brought up around Tottenham, Tottenham fan.
I know you
also
are.
Talking about football, I have to bring it up. When I probably fell in love with you, is that volley on Soccer AM?
How amazing is that?
My
volley. It is a moment, isn't it? Come on.
It's the best moment ever that's ever been.
I think it's the best moment of my
for
life,
me, mate. For me, ever. I went on the year before, did that volley challenge and nearly took a child out.
Yeah, I've done it twice and not got close.
Oh, have you done it?
Yeah.
Isn't it harder than
really?
It looks?
Yeah, mate, you made it look well hard. You smashed it. I don't think I've ever been more proud.
It was actually Jamie Redknapp gave me a little bit of sound advice just before I stepped up, saying it did work.
That.
It did work.
Love
what
that.
Was the advice?
He said, paintbrush it through, just your foot like a paintbrush, paintbrush it. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Paintbrush the fuck out of that ball, mate.
I did. So go on, yeah. So brought up in
Edmonton, round Tottenham and everything like that. So it's a place that it holds so many memories for me. But my nan was the apple of my eye. She was my world. I adored her. I adore all my family, but there was just something between me and my nan. And spent a lot of time with her growing up, her and my granddad. She was a dinner lady. My granddad was a caretaker and they had a big, what we called the schoolhouse. Mum and dad got their first pub and was a little bit rough. So sent sort of me and my older sister, and we lived with my nan and granddad while they were kind of sort of established themselves in work, because work was tough.
Yeah, like, of course. And hard hours as well, obviously.
Yeah, very.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of time with them. And then my little brother came along. And yeah, so we were kind of spent a lot of time with them growing up, but I used to choose to spend my time with them as well. So even when I was 16, I'd go down on my half terms and stuff like that and spend it with my nan and granddad. And yeah, it's just my nan was just one of the best people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my granddad worked really hard at what he did. He was in the Navy. And then he was a caretaker. She was a dinner lady. And just things like she was the most incredible cook. I speak about it a lot when I talk about my food and cooking.
Yeah, because is it your first book? Mm-hmm. Is it the recipes of your nan?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. That's such an amazing thing. Yeah.
Such a great idea.
Yeah, her handwritten recipes that I found when she passed away, just like all wedged in like this cookery book. and just scribbles of notes, and they're my most prized thing. And yeah, so they're in the first book, and it's dedicated, her name was Margaret, but the book's dedicated to Flo. Her middle name was Florence. Like, it's just, she just suited being a Florence because she was just incredible.
Can you remember the first thing you ever learned to cook with her? Was it a cake? Was it like...
No, I think it was like little jam tarts. So, you know, you could probably, you probably know that, you know, the tables which would lift up and extend out.
Yes.
You got one of those, and those chairs that were brown backed that sort of looked leather but weren't. Yeah. I'd drag one of those through into the kitchen and stand on it next to her while she was making, and she'd make everything by hand.
Yeah.
And she'd give me the cut offs of pastry, and then we'd poke them into the Yorkshire pudding tin and put jam in there and make little jam tarts. So I think that was probably the very first thing I can kind of remember. Then it'd be like butterfly cakes and things like that, and just always having an endless supply of ice lollies, which I think has aided and fed my obsession with ice lollies now.
And do you feel like you always had a bit of a flair for it, or was it just something that over time people started to say, oh, you're really good at this?
I don't know. Like, it's a funny way. It's probably the only thing it's ever come more naturally to me. I'm not naturally clever. Like, I laugh when I say that because most people are like, no fucking shit. I had to work really hard. Like,
me too. I can only pull faces, like, babe. At least you can actually create something.
Like,
I can't do anything. No, I'm a terrible cook.
But it's just probably I felt a little bit more natural doing it. And I like to think that I kind of maybe took that from Nan. And just her love of food and just that understanding. I can still see the way her hands moved when she either rolled dough out or she moved with the flour and things like that. I can picture that so, so clearly. But obviously, North London, parts of North London are quite hard work and can be quite interesting. So I don't go back there so much now, but obviously remembering that and it being a real, in parts, quite rough and still sort of is, especially sort of around Tottenham and things like that. And growing up, mum and dad and I, we lived on Edmonton Green in a block of flats, like floor 12. And it's literally like Del Boy, like Nelson Mandela House.
Yeah,
like mum said, like the lift would never be working. So she'd drag the buggy up and me and the dog up and down the flights of steps. She'd go to the market and pass me to someone on the market stall and then pick me up an hour later around the other side. And that's how it was. It was like, that's how things kind of were back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nan would still go to those markets and things like that. And I think that's probably cemented my love of food and the smells of food and the markets and the sound and anything like that. I want to know about it. I want to feel it. I want to smell it. I want to touch it. Talking about food.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the only thing that's come maybe a little bit more natural to me. And I like to think I hold on to the fact that maybe I took that from Nan.
So, like, obviously you're saying, like, oh, you say, oh, I'm not, like, intelligent or not clever or, I mean, you've done pretty well, so I would beg to differ. But I suppose you mean in what people, because I would say the same, and I know Laura would say the same as well, because we've been made to feel probably in like traditional education that we don't quite tick those boxes. And how was school? What was school like? How was early life? You know, was that like?
Yeah, so like I've always had to work hard at kind of like school and stuff like that. And it's really interesting now. I've had a recent diagnosis of ADHD. Couple of years ago.
Me too.
Oh, really?
A couple of weeks ago.
Literally, oh, really?
Yeah.
So mine was
literally a couple of weeks
2 years ago this month.
It makes a lot of sense,
so
doesn't
much
it?
Sense. When I look back at school, I excelled in anything I didn't have to sit still in. And it wasn't because I was that an understanding special needs and things like that now and special educational needs, because I was a special educational needs teacher and I worked in inclusion in my last school. It affects girls and boys very differently. It affects older and
for
younger.
Some time undiagnosing women especially, doesn't
very,
it?
Very, yeah. You know, I'm in my 40s now and I've just been diagnosed. That's very, very common in women.
Yeah.
It's
older.
Considered to be a naughty boys thing, and that's also very untrue with boys.
Stereotypical, naughty, climbing the walls.
And it's very not true. It's a really terrible falsehood, that, yeah.
But when I look back and we were talking about it, and when, because I was speaking to somebody, I was speaking to the psychiatrist about sort of a few different things, and that wasn't what we were wanting to speak about. It was a few weeks on, he went, we need to look at something. We've got to address something I'm not concerned about, but I think you've got...
Might explain some things, yeah.
So school was PE, food, drama, woodwork, needlework, I don't know, textiles, needlework, sorry, 90-year-old Candice. So yeah, it was always just practical stuff, and I loved that. I wouldn't ever go back to school. I think I started to come into my own a little bit at A-level When I did PE, you can just focus. I did PE or BTech sport.
But you still somehow managed to. You managed so well when you think, considering now, obviously now you know you have ADHD. But you managed to get your A-levels, you went to university,
yeah,
and you become a physical educational teacher. Yeah. Is that what you call it? A physical educational teacher?
PE teacher. But yeah, I didn't have to take any exams for my A-levels. I chose a degree, which I only had to take one exam in my first year.
Was it practical?
So, but obviously subconsciously, I knew I couldn't do exams. I can't sit, I can't revise, I can't spend time doing and remembering. My memory's fucking awful. Like, I remember my name, forget my name most days. So yeah, I suppose it's just learning to cope. And now things make sort of a lot of sense. I think women and girls are very good at adapting subconsciously to stuff.
And I think traditionally we make a bit less fuss and maybe a bit less literal noise as well. So I know that I became very introverted and actually quite quiet and withdrawn into my secondary school because I just wanted to, I couldn't work out all the rules that were going on.
Yeah.
And weirdly, and I'm sure it's the same with you because you have like a fantastic personality and people also go, oh, she's so outgoing, she's so confident. I've only just started to speak about my ADHD, but people can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's the thing they go, really?
Yeah.
But you're so confident. You like, you know, it's just, I think in women, it just is presents so differently.
So
and I think for must be generations of women who have just had been ignored and not been had any sort of help or understanding even of themselves in that way.
But also in another way as well, it has aided me. Like I've done things that I probably wouldn't have done.
Hugely.
And the only time I can focus, the only time I do focus is when I'm put under pressure and my head goes down and I know, give me 4 hours to do something, give me 4 hours or whatever it was. To make a fucking gingerbread pub, I would do that gingerbread pub.
Yeah, give me
a week. Nah.
Yeah. You'd still do it in the four hours, right?
I'd still do it in the 4 hours right at the end of the week.
Yeah, I know.
And that's kind of how it is. But one of the other things is with me, like with things and with school and stuff, is I work hard.
Yeah.
I'm not natural at anything. I work hard and I will work and work and work for things and I carry on working and I carry on learning and I'm still doing that now. And I strive for things I want by working for it because they don't come naturally to me.
So, yeah, you mentioned before that your mum and dad ran pubs. So tell us a bit about, did you spend a lot of time hanging out in the pubs they were running?
They ran pubs for about 25 years. So
all in Tottenham as well, in that sort of area?
No, all round, really. We moved around quite a lot. So normally about every 2 or 3 years we moved.
That must have been hard.
Yeah, it was.
Did you move school then as well?
Yeah.
Then? Oh, my God.
And then we sort of settled, I think maybe when I was about maybe 10, 11, 12, we settled in Bedfordshire, so we didn't have to move schools. We still moved pubs, but we stayed in schools. Wow. We stayed in the same school because obviously it was then kind of upper school.
Yeah.
And not moving around so much. But yeah, that's how it was. I'd never known living in a house until maybe I was 21 and I went off to, 18, 19 when I went off to uni.
Was it always noisy? Like if you're going to bed and you could just hear the voices.
In my head, that sounds like quite romantic. I'd be lying up in bed listening to
this low level
noise
of noise. But then I like noise. I prefer noise.
I was going to say, it's probably the growing up in the pub and hearing that little hum underneath.
Yeah, when they came out and we came out of the pubs, we moved into a house for the first time. None of us could sleep.
Wow.
Because it was just quiet. It was weird in a house quiet. But dad was a builder before. He did cleaning, things like that, like stories like getting on the tube and then waking up at the end of the tube line because he'd just gone round
and kid.
Gone, had to go back in. Mum was a nurse for way back when and then worked sort of in a hospital and things like that. And then, they got together, got married, moved into the flat in Edmonton. I think they had. Dad said they had a 3-piece leather suite when they got back from the honeymoon and a fiver. And that's literally like shit, okay. Got something nice to sit and I've got a fiver. But and then they got into the pub business and moved around quite a lot.
When presumably they didn't own the pubs, they were just running them. Is that right?
For the brewery,
And so did you always know that you wanted to run a pub or was that just a thing that's happened more recently?
Yeah.
Because you run a pub with your brother, right?
Yeah. So no, it wasn't. So I wanted to kind of, I wanted to be an air hostess and I didn't really know, and I love sport and everything like that. And I think I always kind of thought I'd be end up being a PE teacher, but I did different bits and pieces. I did flight attendant for a year, which was fucking horrendous. I worked in a gym, just didn't really know what I wanted to do. Then went and did, again, I didn't go back to uni to do a sports degree because I knew I couldn't, my brain couldn't hack it. So I did like learning on the job, like GTP.
So with the PE teacher, how long were you a PE teacher for then before you applied for Bake Off?
So I think I must have been a teacher for nearly, I want to say nearly 10 years.
Oh, right.
Wow. 9, 10 years. So I started as a secondary PE teacher, and then I was ahead of year, which I love, which is obviously a lot of behaviour and things like that. And then I went to a school where I was secondary inclusion department and was still teaching a bit of PE, but was working a lot with special educational needs, and I loved it. And I'd applied a couple of years and I hadn't got on, and people kind of saying like, really, like, are you sure, like, is this a good idea? And I said, it was never a case of, oh, I could do better than that. It was just, I wanted to be part of it so much. I love the show so much. I just wanted to be part of it.
And so you applied yourself.
Yeah.
And then, do you have to do like do you have to do it live in front of them so they know you can do it?
All different, like there's different steps. Like it's pretty, it was really intense when
I bet it is, because so many
were.
People must apply.
Yeah.
So it's like, to whittle them all down
course,
to that few
yeah,
amount
jokers
of
jokers that go, oh yeah, I could do it.
Me going, oh, I have once made some gingerbread.
Yeah, I made some banana bread in lockdown.
A prawn sandwich. They put you through your paces. You have to fill an application form, then there's phone interviews and sort of little quiz, like little tests, I suppose. And
did
then,
you have to give up work for a bit?
No, I was still teaching.
So you're teaching and then going into the tent?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the head teacher knew, and my boss knew. And so I'd go in and sort of say, look, can I have Thursday and Friday off? Because I'm going, obviously, fine. And I come back and he'd be like, how'd you get on? I say, well, if it's okay, can I have Wednesday and Thursday off next week? And he'd be like, yeah. And that's how it was.
So everybody else just go, oh, right, yeah, you want another 2 days.
Yeah, literally. I think everyone either thought I was literally either dying of like some horrible disease because I looked like absolute shit because I was so
exhausted,
tired.
Right?
Or pregnant because I was tired and putting on weight because
eating all these
all I was
cakes.
Eating was cake and magnums.
Have to practice your showstoppers, didn't you? Look at me like I know, but I know that your showstoppers is something you prep.
I'd love
it?
To see you on Celebrity Bake.
I know,
Bake
me
you would,
too.
Babe, I went to that. You know that one that there's like there's one in like South London, where it's like a pretend Bake Off, and I went and did it, and I was half cut. And
I
honestly, the cake was all like, I couldn't even follow the instructions.
I don't think you've amazing. Ever, how long have we been like good, like 20 years nearly maybe now? That's a long time. I don't think you've cooked me out
that time. No, never mate, but I've treated you to a dinner.
You've treated me to lots of dinners. A few cheeky Friday Nando's for sure.
My stepsister is a chef. She like trained in Harrods, like an incredible chef, but she like, she is a chef at a school now because she doesn't want to do all the hours and whatever. And she came
lucky,
to my kitchen and laughed. I've got like 3 pans. I live like a student, mate.
I love it.
I said that and then took a bite of my cake.
I love it. No, I'm campaigning for you to get on there. I think you'd be amazing.
I'd be a disaster, but it'd be funny for everyone.
So good.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see your showstopper. Yeah. Christ.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Obviously, we covered Bake Off. What was that like winning? You know, like, I don't know, because you're a big fan, aren't you, Ham? When you watch that final and there's nothing in it other than just winning and the love of baking. And that's literally what I love about the show. And obviously, you've gone on to do amazing things. And so is some, so the other winners and people that have taken part. But it's not like an X Factor where you get a record deal or whatever at the end of it. It is just
a glass cake stand.
Yeah. And that there's no promise of anything, no TV. No. And I love that. That's what I think everyone loves about it.
But it's a bit different for you, isn't it? Because like for Laurel, for example, like she's been an actress for years and she goes, you know, she's been on stage and then she does little bits on telly and over time that's grown. But your life must have changed from like that being on telly. So like, you're doing it, you're taking your 2 days off and the head's going, yeah, all right. Oh, another week. Oh, okay, okay. But like suddenly it's on. What was that experience
like?
Yeah, suddenly?
It was mental and it still makes me feel a bit weird because it was just mental. That's probably the best word to describe it. I went on it with no other expectations or anything other than I loved the show and I just loved baking and I just thought it'd be amazing to be part of.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm completely and utterly biased, but our 12 were a 12. We got a bollock in one day because Paul came in and was like, we were in the green room and he was like, this is a competition. You should be competing against each other. And we were like, yeah. But I think at that point we were probably like giving each other Chinese burns over like Dobble and Scrabble. So we'd be competitive in the green room playing board games when there was like downtime or judging things like that. Getting to the tent, we'd be like, right, who needs help? And it was that pure. It was that gorgeous and lovely. And
are you not really allowed to do that then, help each other?
Not really, because you could, like, especially in the technicals and things like that, you'd be like,
you don't know what it is.
There'd be words. What was the word? It was like either consecutively or something like that. And I was going, what the fuck does consecutively mean? And Rav's trying to whisper what it is and they could hear them going, no conferring. And I'm looking at Rav laughing because we just were in it for the love of it. And I had no expectations. Yeah. And when I see that back and when I see the genuine shock, it's funny because it looks like I do a little Irish jig, like my feet go and it's genuine surprise. And I didn't expect anything. I didn't know what was going to happen. It was filmed. So the final was filmed in June and it wasn't shown until October. So there was a big old gap. And when that October came around, I mean, it was weird. Obviously, you're then when your names get announced, everyone at the school was like, oh, yeah, now it's right. That's where you've been. That's why you look like shit.
Yeah, but the kids must have thought that was well cool.
Yeah, some of them. But then also I was working with some of the more challenging behaviours as well. Would be like, Miss, you look really, really ugly when you cry. Yep, brilliant, thank you. Oh, Miss, you're a proper shit. Yep, again, thank you. But then you'd get, they'd like, maybe one of them would hang back at the end of a lesson and be like, me and my family have been watching you and like, we think you're really good. And I'd be like, and it was just, it was great. I walked down the corridor and I'd go, Bake Off! And turn around, there'd be no one there. And I'd be like, really? Good one.
So you went back to work after then?
Yeah.
You went back to work?
I went back the day the final was filmed. I remember this day. I went back into school the very next morning. I still had chocolate under my finger, chocolate in my hair. I mean, I say that when you see the state of me on that final, you understand why. I'd had barely any sleep. And I went in and it was GCSEs. I think it was first day GCSEs and I was doing access arrangements, shouting at year 11 to be quiet as they file into the hall for their GCSEs. And the head walks past me and he goes, how are you? I'm like, yeah, good. And he's sort of going, how did you get on? And I looked at him and I just, like this, and I just nodded my head. And he went, Miss Brown, sort out a meeting for later on this afternoon. And he sort of off he went. And I was just, remember just standing there nodding my head at him like, I've just won the Bake Off. But yeah, I carried on working. I worked when it was shown. I worked all the way through because I didn't know what was going to happen.
No,
it was my head
not.
That
yeah.
said to me, go and do this.
Yeah,
like,
I was
go
say,
and do
did
it.
Something shift in you after having that incredible experience going, there might be something in this.
It was my head teacher. Because,
really?
Yeah, I was still working at school, even when it was shown. I was still going back because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't have any expectations. I still don't.
No.
I do jobs and I work and I do things that I love and I can fully get behind and I never expect anything. And he said to me, go and do this. You'll always be a teacher, but go and do this because as teachers, we're encouraging students to follow dreams and to do things that they're passionate about. And I've got to do the same for my staff. Go and do
wow,
it.
Wow, he sounds like a great
guy. He honestly
guy.
So great. And I a little like acknowledgement to them in the back of my first book because not everyone was like that.
And the book deals, did they come pretty quickly? Was that something you come up with and then approached people about?
Or? No, the first one came up quite quick. I wrote the first one in 3 months.
Wow.
How I didn't sleep very much.
ADHD
literally,
much.
Yeah, literally. And I write every single recipe and I test everyone myself.
Wow.
I don't have anyone else doing it and I wouldn't. And that's how I work and that's how I do things. And if I can't do it, then I wouldn't put it in my book because it pisses me off. It's going to piss somebody else off.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So the first one came quite fast. Obviously, I was Bake Off winner on. It was the biggest show. It was like something, I think Consolidate was something like over 16 million views.
It's a big year that year.
It was the biggest.
Big year, yeah.
And then the change to Channel 4, so there was a lot of press. So, of course, book deals were like, right, okay. So I did that first one. That happened quite quick. And I've waited nearly 4 years for this second one.
Wow.
Because it is a saturated market and it's difficult. And I know that and I know it's hard. But what I did with this one was look more at mental health as well. It's something I've started speaking about more.
Yeah.
Is my mental health and how it's affected. And actually how food is a massive thing for me with regards to that. And that therapy of using your hands and things. And also the links to ADHD and the other links that you can have with various different things, whether it's an hour away during that weird lockdown COVID time where you could spend some time learning learning a new skill, or time with nieces, nephews, sons, daughters, or a partner where you spend some time in the kitchen away from what is now your home, your office, your doctors, everything in your one space was that. And that's where Happy Cooking come about. So very different, fucking terrifying, like, because
being
speaking about me.
And,
oh God,
not hiding behind something, but actually being really...
It's a bit sweary as well. Like I went and did some stuff in a school a little while ago and they all got a book each and I was like, sorry, there are some swear words in there.
Just going back to the class thing, like, have you found that you watch how you talk a bit, or you feel like you should watch how you talk a bit because of your upbringing or how you sound?
Especially when you're on TV and stuff, like, did you become conscious of your accent?
I did at the beginning a little bit. It's funny, like, it's something I've never lost. I don't know why I've not lost my act, but then when people hear my dad, they're like, that's why. Dad still talks in Cockney rhyming slang, calls me Winkle.
Yeah.
Still
yeah.
talks in rhyming slang and things like that. And people go, right, okay, now, because it was just how it is. And it's me. It's probably something I will always hold on to because it's my link to where I'm from. People say to me, where's home? And I will say Edmonton. My home is there. Even though I haven't lived there since I was little.
That's my nan.
That is my place. That is where everything happened for me and still kind of does, I suppose, in my head. But yeah, when I came out, it was like just kind of watching myself on stage and things like that. But I just got quite exhausted and actually it was a bit of a short, sharp shock to how people reacted. So I got quite a lot of shit like during Bake Off.
People weren't great.
What was that based around? Your accent?
My face,
and
my
she wore
lips,
a bit of lippy.
My teeth. I know, like
just because you made an effort.
A confident working class
woman.
And she
speaks like she does, yeah. Mm.
And just a bit of like armour as well. Like I'm shitting myself.
Course.
Like I'm going to try and look all right here because down here, like I probably should be wearing a nappy. So it was like, okay, so for the first while I was like, okay, and then I found myself...
Did you feel you were censoring yourself a little bit, or like sort of editing yourself
a little bit,
and watering yourself down?
I think so, and going out like always with makeup on and stuff like that, but then like I found myself on like worst dress lists. posts and people commenting on this and people still saying stuff. And then I thought, do you know what? Absolutely fuck it. I'm going out in my onesie. I've been pictured in my pajamas now. I'm like, I could spend a day getting ready and you're still going to slate something about me. So yeah. I'm going out in my pajamas. I don't give a shit.
Because when
don't
the
like
press
it, don't
are coming
like
after
it.
You, they're coming after you, yeah. isn't it? And that's, yeah. you know, they, yeah.
It's, no matter what you do, you won't win that, will you?
No. It's amazing, as you know, when yeah. it's amazing. But sometimes some of the shit cuts deep and there's
yeah, you
nothing
know,
you can
I get
do
to escape behind a character, really. So I can escape and go, you know, that's character. But it's you. So it does feel hugely personal, yeah, doesn't it, when people are attacking how you look.
How did you do with all the social media and stuff? Did you like read it all and then sort of have a period where you yeah. went, I'm going to have to move away from this? Or
do you know what I did? I did read it. And also, it's nothing I've never had not heard before because I was brought up in a pub. So my friends and family would take it upon themselves to, because we ended up basically saying, I used to get called the C word quite a lot, and it's not cucumber. And so my friends and family would take it upon themselves to see, we'd make a joke, see how long it'd be before as the episode started before someone would call me a cucumber. So my friends and family just messaged me going, you, and I'd be like, right, okay, you won today. I'd be like, well, I don't, it doesn't fuss me, but sometimes it'd be something and I'd be like, what have I actually done? And that was tough because I'd be like, I'm just me. And I think that's why now I'm so staunch. And I always was as a teacher on bullying and don't ever not feel good enough, even though like I battle with that massively, like myself at the moment terribly, but actually, do you know what? Hold yourself responsible for being a dick. Like, and I would go back to my, I don't have that nastiness in me at all. No. I'm not a mean person. The only time it really got to me was people would say, you look like you're a bitch. You look bitchy. Wow. You look like, and I'd go, you're so far from the truth. God. It's untrue. And also, I hope no one is as rude to you as you've just been to me. Or I see in your profile picture, you've got daughters or your is that your family in your picture? What a beautiful family they've got. Let's hope there's no one says anything of any kind that you've just said to me. The negatives are so small and they're not even negatives. We laugh about it. I think most things I will laugh about. There's very few things that really get to me. And if they do, then I don't tell anyone about it. My dad would say, don't let anyone see you upset. Don't let anyone see you cry.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah. It's funny, is it? Because I come from that sort of family. I think it's the very working class thing to go, it's all right, we're all right, carry on, crack on.
Face on.
Yeah, that's probably how you've dealt with it.
Literally.
So brilliantly. I know it probably doesn't feel like that for you, but do you think your working class roots probably helped, right?
100%.
Give you that armour that you needed.
The grounding and how I am comes from my family. My family are amazing.
Yeah.
Like they are just incredible and they're the ones that are going to be there, whether it's blood family or it's family that you've picked up along the way. They're the kind of ones. And 100%, if I started acting like a knob, my dad and my mum would be the first one who would go, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. Sort yourself out. Like, and the same, like, with my brother and stuff. Like, we've had no staff because of everything that's going on. Like, I've been having to get up, clean the pub, clean the bloody urinals. But that's me. Like, if you want to be grounded, yeah, I'll clean the urinals, Ellen. People, when we first opened the pub, go, oh, I'm really disappointed. Where's your lipstick? And I'll be like, I've had my hand down to you, Ben, mate. Dear. So I live in dungarees and sort of this and things like that. But
I think it's very typical of a working class person, like with you know, you've had all that success and you've written your books and you're going on things like Dancing on Ice, which must have been amazing. But
when the urinals need cleaning, the urinals
exactly
need cleaning.
Yeah, but, I wouldn't
no, but
do
here
anything.
You are going, I'm gonna also open a pub because you just never know. I'm gonna open a business because you just never know that the baking might dry
exactly
up.
Exactly that.
So
Laura.
I've got that. And exactly I think that's that. What a working class person does.
Exactly
we never
it.
Rest on our laurels.
That is exactly it.
When you've not had it, you remember what it's like to not have it. So the fear of, you know, that going away.
Exactly.
We talk about that
I
all
needed
the time.
A backup. I was always going to have a backup.
Yeah.
I said, I have no expectations. I didn't go into it wanting anything, but I know I'm not silly and I will continue to work and I work hard and the pub is everything. My brother is the most incredible builder as well. So they did this huge extension, him and my dad during lockdown. He's just so smart and so clever in a completely different way. He was so awful at school. He got no interest in anything. Came out with, I'm not even sure he got any GCSEs. He tells mum and dad he did. Pretty sure he did it.
Yeah, but he can build shit. And,
he can build shit and build well good shit.
Yeah.
So my dad, and it's just, you see that and you're working and you're doing that. And I knew I had to have something, and it's just, I'm beyond proud of it. At times, I'm not sure how I'm not bald, especially the last few months.
Yeah, it must be tough.
Cool. Yeah. But it has been for everybody. But yeah, what you do and what we do is go, right, okay, what do we need to do? Head down, get on with it. Stop moaning. Pull up your pants, pull up your socks. Most of the time they're odd. And just go, do you know what? What do we need to do to survive? And that's what we're going to fucking do. And that's how we've done it. Like, yeah. That is literally it. We, at one point, it was just me, my brother, and his now fiancée, Sophie. We were doing takeaways. It was ridiculous, but yeah. That's how we survived.
Find another way.
Exactly.
Because you've got to, and it's...
100%. 100%.
So, I mean, obviously, you probably don't feel like it, but you're huge, I mean, from our point of view, hugely successful. And, you know, you're in a very different position now financially, and we all come at this now from a very privileged place. And I know we were talking about this before we went on air, but do you still feel working class, even though you're probably not living that working class life anymore?
100%. 100%. I still worry. I worry about money all the time. I have, like, because people have this assumption as well, which blows my mind. Where I find sometimes there's a story comes out and it's like, worth this amount of money,
and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, multi-millionaire,
and I'm like, wow,
one of those weird things online, and they go,
what are they worth?
Well, it said I was 52 for a start on one of it, which was furious.
Sorry.
And then it said I was worth 1.5 million.
I can tell you, listener, she ain't.
No, I ain't. I'm 42 and I've only just bought a flat.
I don't even have a house. I don't have a house. I've got a pub, but I don't have a house.
No.
I feel like in every area of life, there's some snobbery around things. So obviously you've been catapulted into something that was your passion, and now it's become like a professional part of your life as well. Do you notice food snobbery?
From myself, because I don't think I would never. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about this. I don't see how I can be called a chef alongside actual real chefs. I think that's embarrassing to put me in the same.
Do you?
Yeah. Like, I get like, oh, I'm so lucky that some of my food heroes have become good friends of mine now, and I can ring them and ask for advice, and I go and see them, and we get together and things like that.
You've got Mary on speed dial, obviously.
Yeah, but like Tom Kerridge and Jose and people like that, and the Tanner brothers, I'm able to speak to them, and I've been down and spent time with Steve and Terry at Pub in the Park, and we've done all these different bits and pieces, and then there's our little pub there, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, they must be thinking, who is this? She just fannies around with cake. And that's how I see myself. Yeah. But mine is just that continual to work hard. So I will use my spare time and go and spend time at Pub in the Park on Stephen Terry's stall with him, learning from him, before we opened the pub, I went down and did what I called work experience with Tom Kerridge at the Coach for a few days.
Amazing,
I was
literally.
Like, Tom, can I come? He's like, yeah, come down. Like, spend some time in the kitchen. And I put in like four shifts because I want to learn. I want to learn properly. I'm not going down for a couple of hours and fannying around like, oh, I'll just have a look. When I've done stuff for Dining Disco, I went down and I spent 2 days in the kitchen doing it.
When it comes to baking and stuff, do you not... Is it you're talking savoury here where you feel
just
like
everything,
you're a bit more...
Like,
really?
Yeah, because maybe that's because...
Is it because you still feel like a competition winner or...?
Yeah, or just someone that's... It's just a hobby. I don't know. It's really weird. So when people say, what do you... I was a cook. I don't know, but it's funny. I think it's that more from me, but then...
I've tasted this brownie.
Let me tell you.
And that is not done by a cook. That's done by a chef. It's fucking top stuff.
Isn't it?
I'm still going. I'm going to buy it. Carry on.
Finish my furious.
Bye. Was it important to you opening the pub that your prices felt accessible? Like, you know, because you could charge loads. You're Candice Brown. You could be like, you know, what do you call it? Michelin's, get your Michelin stars in or whatever. No, but you could have gone down that route. But have you been conscious to keep it like, you know, you grew up in a pub and you want to be surrounded by
exactly
those people
that
would come into that boozer? And...
Exactly that. The same with the food. Didn't want to go down the route of being anything that we weren't. So the food is good pub food. Everything's made fresh. Everything is
good sized portions,
massive portions,
fantastic.
I'll be there.
We are literally, us two are going to be, oh, hello.
Yes,
oh, we didn't realize this was
you know, people go, should go there, and you go to this posh place, you're like, Where is it? I could eat that again 10 times. It's tiny.
Like with the puddings and stuff, they've got to be big. Like, don't bring me out half a portion of pudding. If I wanted half, I'd share it. I'm not sharing my pudding.
Yeah. No.
So, yeah, we just wanted to make sure that the food was good and it changes according to the seasons. And also we say to people, you might be waiting 15, 20 minutes because it's all being cooked.
Yeah.
And if there's not something on the menu that you like or you want, ask. We can always try and mix it up. Obviously, prices, things like that. Some people are like, yeah, great value. Some people are like, oh, it's bloody expensive. We're like, right, okay. And we will sit and we'll explain to them the reasons for this is because this is something people go, oh, I don't think about things like that. And that's the thing. We want to encourage questions and talking and an understanding of why the menu only has a certain amount of things on, because none of it's stuck in the freezer. It's not all dumped in the fryer. Exactly, it's not put through the microwave. The reasons we're why we only do Sunday roasts on a Sunday is because the Sunday roasts are banging and that's all people want on
God,
a Sunday.
Don't. I
want
to come and have there. A Sunday roast.
Yes, Sunday roast, that's
so
the good. One. Oh, yes.
Yes. Do cauliflower cheese and all?
Yeah, we do. Yes. Yorkshire puddings.
Yes.
Right, so sadly we're coming to the end of our celebration of you, Candice. But at the end of the show, we always like to ask our working class hero if they have a working class hero themselves that they would like to celebrate today. So if you could celebrate someone today, who would that be?
This was a funny one I said to you at the beginning, didn't I? Like, I think this one's been playing on my mind a little bit because I could say my dad is probably the ultimate. Then you've got my brother, my mum, a couple of my best mates and things like that. But I think I want to celebrate hugely is my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, Craig, my sister Tanya, my husband Craig. He is an incredible human being. He was in the army, went into the army from school, no qualifications, went straight into the army. That was his life. Built his way up, was in the Chelsea Blues and Royals. Really, really incredible, was a sniper. He was a sniper. He used to hold the record for the world's longest sniper kill. Was blown up, all these different things. He's hugely suffering with his mental health. He's out of the army now, as lots of sort of veterans do suffer with PTSD, and he was blown up, he was shot in the head, things like that. So really struggling. But what he is doing, he's more recently spoken about his mental health, and he's opened like a survival school, Maverick Survival School, and it's to help people understand and things if they want to do bits and pieces in the world. But he's using his own personal traumas to help men. Men don't speak very much about mental health, and he struggles hugely, and he's done a few bits and pieces, and he's opened the survival school. He was one of the most trained, probably highly skilled persons. So does that make him non-working class? I don't know. But actually, he worked his way up to that.
Yeah.
And now he's working to do something he loves so much that helps him mentally, but also hopefully will help other people. And the response him and my sister are getting is just unbelievable. And I almost feel quite emotional. He struggles so much, and he's just using what he does for so good. And his Maverick Survival School, and I'm going in February. And
is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going down there. I think me and Sophie, and we're going down to do all the camping, and he's going to teach like things like making glue and making like knives and things. We're going to do that with him. He's going to put me through my paces on that. And I just think he needs to be celebrated because he's just the funniest, most amazing man, but he struggles and he's working so hard to try and do something better for
he's
him
into,
but other people.
Into a positive, yeah. And what's his name?
He's Craig Harrison, so, and he's just incredible.
We're going to celebrate you as well as Craig Harrison today. That's amazing. And what's his book? Do you want to plug it?
Oh, it's called The Longest Kill. I mean, it's one of those things. It's difficult. It's fucking tough. It's a tough read. It was a tough job. It was one of those jobs I don't think there's not very many people could do. And he's suffering for it now, but he's just an incredible person.
You know, they tip people out of the army. My stepdad's got PTSD.
Yeah.
He served in Ireland, and you know, they tip people out of the army and they don't take care of them. And
that's
good luck. And it's amazing to hear he's turning that into a positive.
And that's all off his own back, because I think had he not, I think we could be in a very different situation. And he is a light for people that are suffering with him, because things have got to change. Things have got to be different for those people who 100%. Have done nothing but good for the country, for other countries.
Country,
they should be looked after.
Yeah.
Sorry, that went a bit deep there, but I just wanted to...
That's why we asked that question. Yeah. It's brilliant. And I actually thought you were going to say your nan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she came up. I mean, nan, granddad, dad, my brother.
Oh, no, it's probably... But did your nan ever see... Your nan didn't get to see your bake-off? No. She knows.
So I had one nan. So my nan, Margaret, was the one that kind of taught me and everything. And she was my my dad's mum. And then my nan, Ivy, was my mum's mum. Never baked, never cooked. Her diet was 99% Maltesers, I think.
Sounds all right.
Every so often she'd eat a prawn sandwich. But that was it. And she lived till she was 94. So
there we go.
You can shove your lettuce up your ass. I want to eat Maltesers.
And on that note...
Oh, babe, thank you so much. Thanks.
Amazing.
It's been so interesting and brilliant. And I'm so glad I got to finally meet you.
I know, me too.
And for the best cake ever, thank you.
And the best brownie ever.
Oh, you're so welcome. Come to the pub soon.
Oh, yeah, what's the pub called?
The Green Man, Evershalt.
Please get yourself down there. Yeah. I will be. I'm going to have a Yorkshire and
I'll make sure your rhinos are lovely and clean.
Yeah, exactly. The end.
Bye-bye, everyone.
I mean, that was so brilliant. I mean, not just the cake, which honestly was the best cake I've ever eaten in all my life.
Honestly, yeah. And I'm not a cake eater. Like, I promise you I'm not bullshit. You know that. I don't like a cake.
I mean, it's funny that to me, but you don't, do you?
I know. I'd rather have a sozzy roll or a packet of crisps, wouldn't I? But do you know what? I've been following Candice's journey right from, you know, obviously when discovered her in Bake Off, and I just was like so... I just thought, I'm just going to chance me luck and ask her. But also on top of that, just like a really, really great girl. And it's just so interesting, wasn't it, about her journey and still not feeling like she's, I guess,
a professional.
I know, with
that level of success at it.
Yeah, I know.
It's a funny thing, isn't it, as well? And I just feel like I remember so much her being on Bake Off and like what it meant to me hearing that accent on TV and thinking, blimey, you know, we still don't hear it at all in so many different areas of life. It was such a big thing. It was commented on so much. You just don't hear working class women in so many arenas.
I don't know about you, but I know a lot of working class people that didn't for a long time watch Bake Off because they didn't think it would be their thing. It felt a bit middle class.
I thought, I remember thinking, I want to watch a programme with people baking a cake. What is this? Being so middle class. And then just absolutely watching one episode and being like completely obsessed with
and
it.
I don't like cakes, but I was
Oh my God, we know you don't like the cake.
No, that was great. And of course, you can still get Candice's books. The first one was Comfort and the most recent one, Happy Cooking. And that's all available on Amazon, Waterstones, you know, all the usual places you'd get such things. I'm going to download it, actually.
I'm actually going to get Happy Cooking. That's exactly what I need.
Yeah, I want to have a look at Comfort as well, see all her
nanny's
recipes.
Maybe you can finally cook me something. Oh,
we'll see. Bye, everyone, and remember, keep it classy. Oof. The Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Ranga B Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music. This episode was recorded at the Umbrella Rooms. Just to let you know, folks, the Proper Class podcast is now going weekly. And whilst I've got you here, please don't forget to like and subscribe. Spread the word. Tell your friends, neighbours, whoever will listen. We've also got an Instagram page. Ooh, get us. And you can follow all the news and goss at the Proper Class podcast. And if you haven't nodded off yet, we've also gone and got ourselves an official email. So do get in touch. The email is properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, keep it classy.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.